So we are here with Dr. Susan Pierce. She's chief of the Laboratory of Immunogenetics and Lymphocyte Activation Section at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the NIH at the US. So welcome. I am interested in your work. So how BCR structure or IgE isotype is involved in the regulation of B cell signaling and functional responses?
Yeah, and when I read your the question, I haven't thought about the. We did quite a bit of work at one point when we first knew how to image B cell receptors, and when we knew how to image individual B cell receptors, so we could follow their behavior and watch things like the ability of these receptors to form clusters and literally watch in real time as the receptors grew, the clusters grew. And most parameters that we looked at, the IgM was less efficient at all of those than the IgG. And we even went so far, the fellow in my lab, Wan Li Lu, who's now at Tsinghua University in Beijing, has continued this work, and what we identified together was a protein called SAF97 that bound to the cytoplasmic tail of just IgG and not IgM. And it's turning out that that protein accounts for a lot of this efficiency with which the receptor can oligomerize. And he was just at our place where that work is going now, is to ask, does that efficiency translate at all into autoimmunity when the protein is either inappropriately expressed or more when you have a mutation in the SAF97 protein so that it binds more avidly and allows immune responses to things that should really be tolerizing the cell. So I think the how they function is interesting. The big unknown to me still is how IgD works. We haven't gotten very involved in that, but I think these structures have evolved to do different things. I think we just don't know yet what they are.
Yeah, perfect. So talking about BCR. So how does BCR signaling crosstalk with the innate signaling pathway to enhance immune response? How do you?
Yeah. Well, the way that we see that now, and this is work that is just coming out, that we're just publishing. And I think the way people, including us, thought about this intersection of the pathways is that they literally intersected. So if the B cell receptor was signaling in one way, the toll-like receptor 9 is what we studied in detail, would signal so that it would augment or alter in some way that B cell receptor signal, enhance it, make it lower the threshold for activation. And what we think now after this newer work, and what the new work shows us is that the toll-like receptor 9 signaling decides for a B cell what it should do. So I showed the picture of the germinal center cell. When the naive cell first binds antigen, okay, what it should do and what it does do is it signals, internalizes the antigen for processing and presentation to the T cells. So then you ask, well, what happens if there's a lot of infection in the individual, enough so that you have a free amount of the toll-like receptor 9 ligand, which is primarily CpG? And the answer is that the B cell can't process antigen. That signal through TLR9 blocks that. So the B cell then is left with the inability to interact with the T cell which means it cannot get into a germinal center. So what's going to happen to that B cell? And the other thing toll-like receptor 9 does is a real strong proliferative signal. So B cell signals, it can't process and present, it can't get involved in the germinal center, but it gets a big kick to go into, to expand and become a short-lived plasma cell. And the way we ended up looking at that then, we predicted then, is if you had CPG present when you had an antigen, the B cell couldn't get into a germinal center, so it shouldn't ever be able to increase its affinity. And we were able to test that both in a mouse model, where we could measure relative affinities of the antibody after immunization, but even more kind of interesting, when I very first arrived at the NIH, the group in malaria was testing vaccines, and what they were searching for was a strong adjuvant, and what they used was CPG. And what we saw then is there's a big rise in the amount of antibody a human, when they're immunized with an antigen and CPG makes. But what we were able to do this time is measure the affinity. No change in affinity. So, and this was kind of shocking to people. You know, there's a lot of industry built up around them. So we're eager to see, just published this paper, we're eager to see now what the vaccine world says about it, because we're claiming that CPG is not a good adjuvant, because it will leave you just with a big, expanded, short-lived antibody response, which is not what you go for.
Actually, I'm going to ask you about the Africa work.
Yeah, we
are aware of that, but I mean, it's always like, well, you went to Africa to work.
Yeah, I want to work in Africa.
Yeah, so then.
You want to talk about technical glitches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to talk about it.
Well, that's why I thought that Faith Ozer's talk was so gratifying.
Yeah.
She's really a new generation of African scientists. We've published with her and worked with her, and it was just great to see how much progress she's making. She's a real bulldog.
Yeah, I went over there.
I get it to work.
Yeah. Your group actually has been describing population of memory B cells, the ones that you were presenting, for example, but particularly present at chronic infection and chronic diseases in general. So what are these atypical memory B cells, and how important are they to establish a long-lasting immune response in these conditions?
Yeah, that's the question. So when we first saw these cells, when you look at a child, peripheral blood in a malaria endemic area, you can, and you've seen the type then, you get the normal CD for humans, 21 positive, 19 positive cells that are isotype switched. And then you got this N27 positive, so that's the hallmark of human memory B cells. If you can imagine the four quadrants, if you're looking at 21 versus 27, you get naive memory, activated memory, and then down in the negative-negative quadrant, half of the B cells are there. In some children, it's always about 20, 30%, but maybe more. And that's the population that we've been studying. They're present, we think now, in some shape or form in all chronic infections. When I first saw them, because I'm really a B cell biologist, I didn't kind of put it together that, wow, this is a new population of B cells. And these questions you're asking is really what we should be going after. But we sort of let it kind of go. You know, I mean, we looked at them under different malaria endemicities. We looked in different genetic groups and so on. And now we've really put a major effort into understanding what they do. And right now, the evidence that we have suggests that they are cells that have been in the germinal center because they have somatic hypermutational rates that are similar to memory cells. We've done single-cell RNA sequencing of B cells, and we think the lineage is that naive cells can become either memory cells or the atypical memory. And what we see that they're very good at doing is taking up antigen, processing, and presenting it. They have a lot of the interaction molecules with T cells upregulated. And the tiny bit of data that we have now suggests that what they might be doing, if you can imagine at that germinal center cell with the naive cells interacting with the follicular helper cell, there's a lot of inflammation. The cells are kind of being driven around the T cell. What we think they're doing is differentiating into these funny memory cells. And they're feeding back the T helper follicular cells to try to control inflammation, try to get these T cells to stop. Most of the T cells that we see in the periphery of children in malaria endemic areas, they're T follicular helper cell 1 inflammatory type cells. So we think that they're trying to quiet the response down. And if so, I mean, you already know the response doesn't work very well, but maybe without these cells, it wouldn't work at all. So that's what we're pursuing right now. So we're taking cells from several chronic infections. Malaria is our bread and butter, but we're working with someone at the NIH who has the same cells for HIV, high viremic. We've just set up a collaboration with a group in Norway that has celiac disease, B cells, to ask the same question. And then lastly, a group that has BAF receptor, BAF cell, BAF receptor mutations in a human population that's associated with SLE and MS. And so we're looking there. So what we want to do is ask, what do we think they do, and do they do those same things in all these infections? Well, I think that this is where it's coming in. We've done many of the studies similar to the ones Faith Osier talked about this morning. But you're really left, I feel, at the end of the day, needing to understand how the B cells are actually responding. So then, and I think that is my role. We collaborate with a very talented now malaria immunologist, Pete Crompton, who looks more globally at the phenomena of the immune response by looking at peripheral blood cells, asking what they can and can't do. And we've sort of settled in over the years into our role has become sort of to diagnose at the molecular level why the cells behave that way. So that's where I'm back in my own comfort zone because I'm not that comfortable with, I've never worked with anything as big as a human being. But it was helpful in the early days to work in Mali to understand what Faith showed you with this well-equipped laboratory, a group of eager students interested in doing the research, what it takes to actually make that happen. And my colleague, Keith Crompton, is so talented in that way. And we've then followed along by being the biochemist, the cell biologist. And we're hoping to help understand vaccine development that way.
I think that's all.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Great.